The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit VoicesOfWrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. It is we also like Mr. Wrestling too, but it is Revolution Week for AEW. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. Chris is having a good week. He's happy. He's clean shaven. It's a young baby face, Chris Novembrino, that I saw before we turned off the video.
But always heel on the microphone, Hawkins.
Always heel on the microphone, yes. Some quick plugs, because I'd love me some me. Over on the Fightful Overbooked YouTube channel, two videos of me dropped this week. One that was recorded around the time of Royal Rumble, talking about Bunkhouse Stampede 88 and its tie-in to the creation of the Royal Rumble. And this week on Thursday, me and Joel Pearl talked history of the dog collar match, and went through some of the important dog collar matches in history, its origin. He's like, so if you like history, Jeff, gone over to the old Fightful Overbooked. If you like modern day wrestling, Jeff, for some reason, over on Fight Game Network, myself, Paul Fontaine, who hosts the Dynamite Show after Dynamite every week, are joining the Boom Show with James McDaniel and Kevin Ely, doing a pre-show for Revolution. We'll be on that channel starting an hour before. So, you know, put us on the computer and put the pre-show on the big screen. Be a fun time had by all, I think. Chris, you got any plugs you want to get in right now, or are you going to wait till the end?
No, I mean, if you want guitar lessons, you can always hit me up on Twitter. I teach guitar lessons. I'm pretty good at teaching guitar lessons. It's what I do for a living. So if you want guitar lessons, hit me up.
There we go. Big story of the week, depending on who you ask. Although it is a fairly big story, but you know, it's always the big announcement always seems kind of facetious in some ways when announced by AEW. But Tony Khan has bought the rights to Ring of Honor, including the videotape library. I got into a bit of a fight on wrestling Twitter because I kind of poo-pooed this. Fightful, our friend Sean Ross Sapp over there said it in previous years that, or in previous bids that had been, he had heard bids around 10 million, around 40 million. He had heard a bid of 30 million for half of Ring of Honor and their assets. Dave Meltzer in the Wrestling Observer reports that one person with knowledge of WWE's attempting to buy the company said, quote, smart move regarding Khan. Even smarter counter move to WWE fumbling the ball on the purchase, which definitely would have happened had Levesque not gone down, Levesque being Triple H. Besides the complete mess that has happened to NXT, this is the first sign of Levesque's absence. He would have pushed this through. He was flirting with the idea in 2018 when Vince McMahon started thinking, let's buy New Japan, which never went anywhere. Unknown what is to be done with Ring of Honor and their video library. One big positive is that Ring of Honor owned the rights to All In, the first pay-per-view that started us down the road to AEW by Cody and the Young Bucks. thoughts that they might go with a streaming service of some way, perhaps even a hub on HBO Max. Those rumors abound. They will still be running Supercard of Honor in Dallas, and there's a possibility of AEW talent being put there. Nobody knows yet the future of trying to sell a show with Ring of Honor branding just yet, or if it's just going to be rebranded AEW. Chris, I am not a big Ring of Honor fan. My tweet was congratulations on the number two company buying the number four company, even though the number four company was dead. I have dismissed this a bit. Former host of this show, Rob McCarron, a big Ring of Honor guy, says I can't see the forest from the trees here. I understand there's some value in the Punk and Danielson and Samoa Joe video libraries and for other talent that's on Adam this Cole. Roster. And yes, on this roster and stuff. I will let you give your opinion before I give a little bit more analysis.
So I think you buried the lead here. Tony Khan had just the promo of his life on Wednesday night. Wasn't that fantastic? That guy is dynamic. He looks into the camera. Those eyes, larger than life. It's just screaming at the top of his lungs. Clearly enjoying himself way too much. What a dazzling promo.
Remembering his lines. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Mr. Khan really nailed it here on Wednesday night. And I think that it's kind of to your shame that you bury the lead on that one. Now, as to the the ROH tape library, I was not a huge fan of ROH either. And the reason I was not a huge fan of ROH is that the production quality was all over the place. So I think what the ROH library is useful for is, one, now WWE doesn't have access to it. Two, when AEW wants to make, you know, specials on Danielson, on Adam Cole, Samoa Joe, on these type of people, Christopher Daniels, you now have this tremendous tape library to actually pull from and really sort of establish the historicity. I think it also matters because it establishes AEW as like sort of the new like Pepsi to WWE's Coke. Like they are sort of the un-WWE company. Would I pay for a streaming service to rewatch the ROH catalog? No, probably not, dude. I don't think it would move the needle for me at all. And AEW still doesn't have enough of a tape library yet either for me to justify wanting to buy a, you know, service so I could watch pay-per-views from last year. Which would make up like, I don't know what, like 25% of the overall tape library. I think that it's nice, but I think that anyone who thinks this is a big needle mover is maybe overstating the current relevance of ROH.
I'm of the opinion that putting this on an existing service wouldn't be the worst thing in the world here. And we found this out, I think I may have held this from you a bit, but I talked to somebody at Peacock eventually.
Why won't you tell me things? Like, what is it going to take trust in this relationship?
Just forgot, Chris. That's all I
did. Okay,
it was early in
like
the week.
My birthday.
When's your birthday?
Yeah, exactly. Years we've been on the air. Years.
Well, all my birthday reminders are from Facebook, Chris, at this point. I mean, I'm going to
I don't have that. I know better than that.
Yeah, exactly. You are the smart one. But I did eventually, not about the job, but just about because it was more of a heads up that it looks like Peacock and the WWE library may not be partners in the long term. Perhaps being shopped elsewhere. And look, we know from numbers when there was a WWE network and on Peacock now, archival footage is not a big draw for people. I understand that you can do modern documentaries.
And I think that's still hard for people to get their mind around because in the fan base, one, because the fan base loves the history. We love to talk about the history. And the dominant narrative at the launch of the WWE Network is that what was going to be the big driver here was probably going to be like people just wanting to go through and watch all this old wrestling and stuff. Now, I will say, Jeff, we saw that the WWE's version of a tape library was not very successful.
Oh, it was horrible.
But it was horrible, right? Like, I truly do wonder if someone made a good, coherent, enjoyable library archival experience, if that truly would be bad, or if it was just that the initial idea of, oh, I'll get on the WWE Network and I'll watch all the old Jake the Snake matches. That was so hard. If you typed Jake the Snake into that search engine, you got the most crappy, not aggregated by date sort of results for Jake the Snake. And so you could watch three or four matches, no context, no order, and then you move on with your life. Like that's what they really shot themselves in the foot on. All of that being said, I really have a hard time seeing how the Ring of Honor archival library would be the major draw for a streaming service.
Here's the other thing that hurts archival footage in many ways. The fact that the company puts out, both companies now put out such a glut of product per week. AEW puts out, 8 hours of wrestling a week? I understand. Like, I barely have time in my busy schedule to watch the wrestling that I want to catch up on for historical purposes because I watch so much modern wrestling right now. I just, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you'll hear like 200 people say, oh, I'll put it on in the background while I'm working, blah, 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 blah. But for the most part, it's not a money maker. It's not a revenue generator. And that's the thing I have. Now here's the other question I have. Would you just take an existing show that they have right now, a dark elevation, and rename it Ring of Honor? Would you make it a developmental territory? Because I've heard a lot about that. And I've heard even plans, well, maybe we rebuild Ring of Honor. Look, Ring of Honor's a bad brand in the marketplace right now. It just went under. It's not able to keep television. It's still number four behind Impact in the United States, which doesn't draw a lot of things anyways. Or would you take the stronger brand of AEW and just, you know, hey, we have this, we can port it into a product of some kind. We could say AEW presents Ring of Honor, something to that effect. Or would you just let the brand die?
I guess I could justify Ring of Honor as a way to rebrand the developmental territory. I think that's kind of interesting. And you because I think Dark is too, going back to what Eddie Kingston was saying earlier, I think Dark even sort of is too self-referential to what these matches are. Ring of Honor at least puts some prestige on these developmental talents and maybe potentially gives them a vehicle to like build a little bit of a cachet with the audience. I think maybe even the format change would be interesting too. I think there's something to be said for the older NXT model where the NXT, the developmental territory, is a different flavor from the main territory. I think that actually does give the talents on that brand an opportunity to grow a little bit more.
Okay. I'm still, it's a lot of money. And I understand the all in, getting that footage is very important for the history of the company and stuff like that. To me, it felt like more of a fanboy move than a business move. It's like Tony Khan's a fan of Ring of Honor, so he's going to buy another company, you know, to save it. And nostalgia will sink you, man. I just, sometimes in terms of business. And it's
weird too, what Khan is nostalgic about. And It very much in listening to that promo and then thinking about this business decision and of what utility I think it is. And then, you know, another headline we're going to talk about, not signing Cesaro. Sometimes I feel like Khan's letting his emotions kind of get in the way of business. And like, this just seemed to like be a kid who wanted to have a thing from his childhood real bad.
I don't think we're going to talk about that, but okay.
We're not talking about the Cesaro thing?
No, we're not, because I can't confirm certain things.
So you're keeping more secrets. God, I'm like, dude, I'm like halfway out the door on this show already.
I feel
a little bit betrayed. It's fine. No, it's cool.
A&E calls for 35 new episodes of Biography WWE Legends. Production is also beginning on 24 new episodes of memorabilia-themed original series WWE's Most Wanted Treasures, which will air over multiple seasons. They're also working on another show called WWE Rivals for 40 hours of TV. I think most of these will be rehashes of crap that's already been on the network. But it looks like A&E is all in on the WWE business. I believe A&E is owned by NBC Universal as well, so this might be an intercompany type thing for more MOAR content. These A&E shows are terrible, by the way.
Yeah, but and I get that initially it doesn't seem like a strong fit, but you got to remember that A&E stands for Arts and Entertainment, and WWE stands for World Wrestling Entertainment, and so this really is good quality synergy.
Oh, that's some fantastic analysis, Chris.
Thank you. Wrestling's a bit of an art
this
form.
This is why you're
the
tops in the game right now.
Yeah, a lot of people say I'm underrated, Hawkins. Not many, because or they say I'm not well known too.
Well, there's a comedian by the name of Richard Jenny who is passed on, but one of my favorite jokes of his was a line about A&E's tagline was time well spent. He goes, you know, if you change the punctuation on that, it becomes far different meaning. It's time well spent. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with WWE's Most Wanted Treasures now that Top Dollar no longer hosting the show. So we will see about that. Speaking of WWE, they have ended their broadcast partnership and have shut down the WWE network in Russia.
Yeah, this kind of caught me from left field here. Any reason?
because other businesses are divesting from Russia right now.
It's a trendy thing. Oh, this is cancel culture. That's what's going on here.
But I'm going to talk a little sociopolitical here, Chris. So there's a politics
angle on all this.
There's a little politics angle for me. In terms of watching this and analyzing this, I think this is a bad move for all these companies
really
to divest from Russia, because the Russian government is the one to blame. And let me tell you why. I might be off base on this, so you can pull me back if I'm off base on this, by all means. Part of the plan for Vladimir Putin in terms of just watching him and stuff like that is to get the old Soviet Union back in some ways. And the way to do that for him, part of that plan is to de-Westernize Russia. So all these businesses from the West who are packing up and leaving and saying they won't do business in Russia. And it's not really affecting the government. It's mostly affecting the people that are in Russia. And you know, people, you know, like Airbnb has stopped doing it. Well, that doesn't affect the government. That affects the people that owns the places in Russia, et cetera, et cetera. This is all just kind of playing into his plan in many ways and saying, okay, you're part of the West. We don't want your culture in here anymore anyway. Soviet culture, much more superior.
Yeah. All right. We'll crack into this for a second here.
Okay.
Yeah. I get your position on this. I think it's not an unreasonable analysis, but I do strongly disagree. Not like saying that Jeff's a bad person. Here's just my take on this, right? I look at Russia's invasion of the sovereign nation of Ukraine as something that right now the world has been underreacting to.
I agree there. No, I totally agree with you on
that. Yeah, no, I know you and I are broadly on the same page. So as part of this, frankly, for the listeners.
For the listeners, right? Yes.
Yeah. Like, so I think that for me, the Ukraine situation is actually pretty serious. There are a lot of bigger implications beyond just the general affront that I think it should be forcibly stopped when one country invades another country. Like the world should actually react to that in a meaningful way. Don't need the history lessons. I have my own opinions on that. Listen to Don't Worry About the Government. When it comes to the businesses acutely, I think it's important that the businesses do this, because what Vladimir Putin also wants to do, I'm not a Putinologist, no one really is, but like, I could also see an argument that what Putin wants to do is have people in his country basically think there's not really a war going on, and that what's going on in Ukraine right now is fairly normal. And given the annexation of Crimea, it seems like there's potentially a roadmap, absent the West's business responses to this, where Putin's basically able to treat what he's doing in Ukraine as Crimea part two. So I think the business is pulling out their signals to the Russian people. Hey, no, like, what your guy Putin is doing is actually very bad. It's bad enough that he should be facing charges at The Hague. He won't. He should. And I don't have a problem with this response. If anything, I just come from the angle of I would like more.
We just need to put Raw on 24/7 in Russia, and then everybody will want to flee. we could shut down the government by putting on Raw 24/7, and the people will rise up in revolt, saying, "Please stop this! Stop these bad angles!"
McMahon right now is trying to get.
We could get Vince McMahon the Nobel Peace Prize if he just plays the WWE Network in Russia.
McMahon is trying to get out his Rolodex right now and see what Miro's up to. Hey, buddy, you want to come back to the country?
Nikolai Volkov, we got a hot angle for
Lana,
you
and Lana, come back. We're going to give you your gimmick back.
He's going to be from the Ukraine now.
No, he's going to be from Russia again.
Oh, is he?
We're bringing him back heel, like, and they're back in love with Putin.
Oh, okay, maybe you can
for the heat.
Volkov.
For the
yes,
heat.
For the heat.
Yeah. For the heat.
The all important heat.
Hawkins, it's all about heat.
Thanks, Bully Ray. Also announced for AEW, the June 1st Dynamite show, the show right after Double or Nothing, will be at the Forum in Inglewood, California. Lovely, lovely Inglewood, California. Also, the Rampage the following Friday will be live from Ontario, California, which has historical significance to those of you who are fans of the Bullet Club. If you recall, they marched on the arena when SmackDown was there. I believe Jimmy Jacobs got fired for coming out there and greeting them at that time. But yes, neither of those shows are easily accessible for me or most Los Angelinos, but you know, the Forum in Inglewood, yeah, that's easier to do, I would guess. That's right down the street from where the Super Bowl was. It's not a fun party town type of area of Los Angeles. Those of you who have don't know the geography of Los Angeles, Ontario, probably a little bit easier to do, but it's about an hour and a half drive outside of Los Angeles. It's not in the big city, but looks like AEW is finally going to dip their toe in the water here in Southern California, Chris.
Well, that will be interesting for Southern Californians.
That's a proper answer. I assume the Young Bucks, Rancho Cucamonga is fairly close to Ontario, and they said they will be in a big match for the Rampage show. So it will not be a 1 hour. Okay, that's it. You can leave now. Gonna dip into a little bit of rumor here. We don't like doing a lot of rumors on this show. We like news for the most part. But bodyslam.net threw an interesting story up there that negotiations between Cody Rhodes and the WWE have come to a bit of a standstill. I'm going to take my victory lap on this, Chris, because I believe I said on this show that that if you don't have a deal in writing, you don't jump from the job. And I think, now this is all in my mind right now, that if Cody was using the WWE for leverage, this is one of those classic, he made a terrible, terrible miscalculation on how he would be treated. Because I can see in my mind, Cody thinking he's the businessman now. I'm a former executive vice president. I'm going to negotiate with Vince as an equal. And Vince going, like, okay, we're ready to go back over your thing. Yeah, the deal's changed, Cody. you know, you're not as valuable as you once were. Now that you're gone from AEW, we'll give you half of what we were originally offering. Womp womp. And now Cody is in a bind because Ring of Honor has been bought up. He's not going to be able to go there. Although if he and Tony are still on good terms, maybe they'll let Cody run Ring of Honor since he's kind of on the outs with some people in the upper brass in AEW. Give him his, you know, hey, he was part of this growth for AEW. Let's give him his own fiefdom over there. I could still see him just going, okay, the hell with this. I'll go to the WWE for whatever they'll give me. We don't know if this is true or not, but any thoughts from you on this?
I think that Cody made a tremendous mistake here. I'm increasingly wondering if...
Well, we don't know if Cody made the mistake or if Tony didn't want him back.
Well, I mean, Cody should have figured out where he was going in this negotiation. Yes, the way he chose to do this publicly, I think, was sloppily handled. I think we'll be able to look back when we get all of the facts, Hawkins. I feel it very, very confident. We will look back at those promos on TV where he's referencing his contract as stupid moves. That those were not sound negotiating tactics, but rather a dude flailing. I have a hard time seeing a wisdom in how Cody Rhodes handled this. The best thing I can say is that this absence from AEW has made some people think more fondly about Cody's time in AEW. Obviously, he does have supporters. Like Big Swole said some nice stuff about him this week.
Yes.
And I think it could potentially help hit the reset button if he came back in and maybe he get cheered again. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what this guy has been thinking for the last 6 to 8 months here, refusing to turn heel, handling this contract negotiation the way he's handled this contract negotiation. Just not what I would have expected from Rhodes. But like, as we said in the last episode, I think there's a real point where good Cody turned into bad Cody around that Anthony Ogogo feud.
Yeah. I'd go there. I'm a fan of most of Cody's work in AEW because his instincts seem to me to be a little bit more old school, a little bit more simple storytelling, as I've said, a little bit more of a build there. But yeah, now we're going to get into a little bit of analysis here. On Wednesday, I believe it was, there was an AEW media call. And on Thursday, we had the Pat McAfee interview with Vince McMahon. And if you have not listened to the flagship, I highly recommend it. Joe Lanza's and even Rich Kreich's, and I'm not doing that to dismiss Rich.
Even Rich Kreich. Well, Rich, now you know how it feels. Welcome to my world, Rich. I love you. I love you.
I love you. I didn't mean it like that. I just meant Rich. I mean, Joe was the ranter here for the most part, but Rich had some points in between Joe's ranting at about 40 minutes in on the flagship, and I wanted to include Rich, but it just came out even Rich Kreich. Oh, someone in the Slack, if anybody listens, will probably pick up on that. Probably Andrew Rich. I blame him. But his rant on the media basically comes down to this: was to take the more influencer type of wrestling media who were praising Pat McAfee for this Vince McMahon interview and basically take them to task for, you know, propping up McAfee when he should have probably asked a few tougher questions in this interview. If you've never seen a real Vince McMahon interview with the media, I highly recommend going to watch his one-on-ones with either Bob Costas or Armin Katayan, in which he makes a jackass of himself.
They are fascinating.
By demeaning people, he bullies them. He threatens physical violence on one of them, at least. He's an asshole, for lack of a better term.
And he's got one more great self-destructing interview in him. I know it. I truly believe that. And McAfee was a fool for not getting it.
Well, McAfee is employed by the company. I'm sure that
if he was, you know, he should have went for it. This is Pat McAfee we're talking about here.
It's funny because Vince's first line was, "I'm an a-hole blah, 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 blah. This interview, I watched the McAfee interview as well. It's Vince riding high on his own BS. He is in tall cotton right now. Because Vince is, to me, and this is an amateur psychological breakdown. Vince is one of those people who thinks all his negatives are the things that made him successful. Vince McMahon does not like wrestling, as Joe Lanza aptly said. He's been stuck with it, and he's very bitter about that. But he wanted to stick it to his old man at the same time. And at the same time, Vince, I think, is also scared to death that any of his children will ever do to him what Vince McMahon did to his father. I think that's why he's treated Triple H like this, his son-in-law, why he's treated Shane like this. I think someday Stephanie gets fired from WWE just to prove a point. That's what I think. But he's also one of those guys who thinks his success has opened some window of self-awareness and that he's on a higher plane. Like he's, you know, like he's Ubermensch or something like that. And how, you know, you should be able to control your body for sicknesses and things like that. He really thinks, I think, that yeah, his success is due to all these bad things that people say about him, treating people poorly, all these, you know, everything's relative in business and profit is really the only thing there. But it's also, well, you know, this is why, like, if he was doing a podcast, he'd be doing podcasts with guys like Tim Ferriss, to me, you know, how's your self-realization? Those
I
types
could see
of guys.
Him doing like, I could see him kind of working like the Rogan, Branko, what's his name, Muratic or whatever that, like, I could see him working that circuit too.
He's every motivational poster in terms of his BS.
But there's like a Randian, there's an Ayn Randian sort of thing. Yeah. I guess that's what I was trying to tease out. Like there's a very John Galt, I am the sacrificer, society sort of rides on my back thing.
Oh, I was thinking more Horatio Alger, rags to riches story, when it's like, he's a guy who thinks hard work got him everywhere. When his dad got him his first internship from a golf partner or whatever. And he really denies the aspect of luck in success, but he also just thinks that, you know, you can't be friendly in business ever. Like the two big pull quotes, one got a lot of play and one was one that Lanza picked up on that I think is very, very apt. The first one was saying is my wife at the time, which is Linda, which means he's no longer married, but that's a fairly open secret to a lot of people that he does not live with his wife anymore. He lives in New York City, I believe, in the city proper, and she lives in the house in Stamford. But he said this to Pat, and this is what really set Joe off, and I'm inclined to agree for a different reason. And he said, well, once we went public, I could fire people without having to work, you know, I could fire excess baggage. He also referred to cuts as excess baggage. I don't think it was part of this quote, but he says, I could fire people without having to worry about, you know, do they have cancer or can they take care of their family? Because it was all about the bottom line for the shareholders. And I just thought that's a line where you make up an excuse for things you already were going to do in the first place. He was never empathetic when they were private either, but he is now going to use excuses to justify this behavior of his. And that was a fascinating line.
I think it's also like going back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, business, everything being relative or whatever. I think with McMahon, it's just, you can do whatever you want so long as you can justify it with a business defense. So long as you can justify it through business somehow.
The reason I want to bring this up is because this is a larger indictment of wrestling media. And I think wrestling media is not self-aware enough of their role in everything here, be it positive or negative reinforcement of these things, because we go to the day before with the AEW media call. And these media calls are dreadful. These media calls are terrible. Because I think, how am I going to put this? Back in the day, there was a show called Entertainment Tonight. It still exists, but back then you had Entertainment News and you also had Leonard Maltin doing film reviews. And Leonard Maltin was a film movie reviewer. He was a real movie reviewer and he would pan movies that were bad. Well, eventually the studios, some of whom were funding this show, decided we don't want Leonard Maltin trashing our new product. And if you want access to interviews and things like that, you're not going to be critical of our product. And so Entertainment Tonight is now mostly the Inquirer. It's like gossip stuff, but you never really get any hard Hollywood information on it. It's soft news. I mean, you're never going to hear so-and-so had a drug problem on the set of this movie or those types of things, which is the things that I think people really want in terms of learning about the business of Hollywood, because it's a mystery of them. I view wrestling very much the same way. So you only get really three kinds of questions on these Tony Khan media calls, even though he's the quote unquote nice promoter and good promoter. You get and you get questions like this. Tell me about this talent who's currently on the roster. And the answer will be, well, we're really impressed with how he stepped up going to the pay-per-view, blah, 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 blah. Tell me about this talent who's not on the roster. We'd love an opportunity to work with him if it's the right fit. You know, because there was a question about Cesaro on there. So that's the thing there. And then there's always some guy from Britain who asks when they're coming to the UK. That's your media call right there. That's it right there. And it's and you have these different types of people involved in wrestling media who are playing a role. They're not really like, you have the Denise Salcedos, the Louis Dangors, the Chris Van Vliet's, who are content creators. Well, two of them are content creators for themselves to get clicks and things like that. Denise, of course, wants to be in wrestling and she's going to be ring announcing at Ring of Honor, but she was in the AfterBuzz pipeline. She wanted to be part of WWE through connections there. It hasn't worked out for her just yet, but who knows? But, you know, she's sunny, perky, morning host type, never wants to offend anybody type of thing. And, you know, does her softball interviews with wrestlers and things like that. She's not a journalist. She's a personality who is making money off of softball interviews that are granted by the company. And as Joe said, when you interview somebody from AEW, you have to give a list of topics to get pre-approved there. They're very controlled environment type stuff. Then you get the kind of journalists like Dave Meltzer, Wade Keller, Mike Johnson, guys who know the things, but they're basically, we want to hear the rumors from backstage from them. They're not really hard journalists per se. They are gatekeepers for rumors in many ways. And they all run. Look, I love the Wrestling Observer. It's a trade journal. I get it. A lot of them will get upset when you say that, you know, that when you question their objectivity, but you know, we're not objective. Nobody's objective. I mean, our part in the wrestling media sphere is critics, and we're playing a role here. We're wrestling fans talking about wrestling, blah, 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 blah. And then you have the David Bixen spans who I consider him a friend, but he's more of an investigative journalist doing long thought
pieces.
Twitter archivalist in many ways. Yes. But he has his axes to grind as well. He's not, you know, there are things, I mean, he has agendas he wants to push, and, you know, Thurston does analytics of numbers and things like that, but he has agendas he wants to push as well. At times, I like Brandon Thurston a lot. And a lot of those are anti-Vince because they don't like Vince. And I get that too. So I think these two problems are both two sides of the same coin. We're not really... Chris, here's my problem. And it's one of those things where a lot of people just don't see the forest from the trees. We are never going to be told anything about the wrestling business that the people running the wrestling business don't want us to know. And everything else is just kind of theater in many, many ways that sometimes masquerades as journalism and things like that. And if you get the veneer dropping, you consider yourself lucky and you take that information and you go with it. It's stunning to me how much play this got in Twitter, especially about the McAfee interview. Why wasn't he tougher? Why didn't he nail him on Saudi Arabia when he brought it up? And he's like, it's like, because it's Pat McAfee. He does dude bro radio with his friends.
I mean, besides, like, the interesting question that McAfee would ask on Saudi Arabia is, so, wow, Vince, WWE decided to cut relations with Russia this week. Why are the relations with Saudi Arabia still standing? What is the state of them going forward? Like, do you really think Pat McAfee is going to ask that question? Really?
No.
I'd love that, but he's not going to.
No, he's doing late night talk show stuff on there. What are you here to plug? And let's have a little witty banter amongst each other.
If you were going to get anything out of McAfee on that front, it would be McAfee pissing off McMahon, and it would have been interesting in revealing what McAfee had like pissed McMahon off over. But it wasn't. I mean, that was the most you're ever going to get out of him. McAfee's not like a probing interview. He never has been.
And I think my problem here is just general expectations of journalism have gone down so much where we think, like, I hate the phrase journalism's job is to afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted, because then they start rationalizing certain things about what team they're on, and their biases start to show a lot more. And it's just, look, your job when you get an interview, look, I hate softball interviews. I hate them. I don't watch them. If I think they're just plugging something, or they're just going to, they're going to tell you what you want to hear, that's fine. But I also don't necessarily like ambush interviews all that much, Chris. I don't like watching people be uncomfortable all the time when without a chance to defend themselves. I do feel some empathy for those kinds of things, no matter who it is. So what are we doing? Talking about, all this wrestling media is a fraud for the most part. That's based on industries that they have no real access to. It's just kind of you're playing the role of a journalist. You're playing the role of an interviewer. I'm playing the role of a critic in many, many ways. You know, it's not, I don't know. I thought I had a point here, and I guess I don't, Chris. It's help me here.
I think you're on to something with the notion that there really is no such thing as wrestling journalism. And I think so much of our problem with wrestling journalism is that we keep thinking
it's real.
Yeah, that it's a thing that can really exist. And, you know, the closest thing that meets the surface of getting something out there that people don't want to know about would be, like
shoot interviews.
Well, shoot interviews, or like archival diving and seeing what like statements people have made in the past and putting those out there. And I think sometimes in the case of those sorts of activities, the real question can be made, and I've certainly brought up on this podcast, is that really journalism, or is there like literally anything better that one could be doing with their time? Then it brings us back to the question, what would account for wrestling journalism? I guess it would be like somehow getting access to AEW internal emails that they didn't want to have out there. Like, getting in contact with an AEW employee who's not like Tony Khan or a vice president who's an active wrestler, but like an actual office person. And that actual office person gives you actual internal information. Like that would, I guess, be the closest thing to a wrestling journalism activity.
But that's still mostly rumor mongering in many ways.
It's still right. And then like the journalism would basically be based off of how useful is the information that one is actually getting. But I'm saying the activity of finding an inside source, getting inside sourced information and getting it out to the public in a way that the company in question does not necessarily want to have happen. That's the closest thing I can think of to journalism. Because you're sort of right, like, not to speak in more journalism adages or whatever, but like, if you're just giving what the administration wants, that's not reporting, that's propaganda.
That's basically propaganda, and that's what guys like Alfred, I want to say, it's not Kimura, I can't remember his last name, but he's a Forbes contributor, which, you can get fairly easily, but he uses that as his entryway and also his.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. His thing, but he's also the guy that gets the fast nationals from WWE in order to make AEW look bad. He is a bit of a propagandist. But he also, I believe he works for Wrestling Inc. as well, doing analysis over there. We're all kind of doing in wrestling media, thinking we're part of the wrestling business, but we're not in many ways. And trust me, people who work in wrestling will tell you you're not part of the business in your DMs from time to time. And it's almost like pro wrestling in and of itself. There's like, there are certain people with gimmicks. There's, I'm the guy that gets all the scoops, but I'm also a heel and I'm going to tell you about wrestlers' butts every week, and you know who I'm talking about there, some of you, but you know, those types of people who like, and then everybody gets to their own little gimmick in the wrestling media too. It's like, all right, whatever, man. It's such a weird bubble to be in.
Yeah, we're in it.
we're in it, and you know, I love it, but at the same time, there are times where I go, everybody needs to take this stuff way less seriously, but you know, like,
well,
with everything.
I mean, that is sort of my recurring mantra on this show, but like, you know, I guess
when money is involved, people take it seriously. That's,
yeah, no, I get that. And I mean, like, you know, if you're running a site or whatever, you sort of then have a confirmation bias to assume that everything is news, right? Like if you're running a wrestling news site, you're always looking for wrestling news. And so you'll say something is news when maybe it's not necessarily up to that standard.
Right. And that happens a lot. And then people accuse you of being clickbaity when you're just trying to, okay, maybe it's news, maybe it's not. I'm going to run and see what happens. It's such a weird thing. I don't know. I just wanted to talk about wrestling media for some reason. Cause it fascinates me that I'm kind of in this and I have my own C-level celebrity and I'm being a podcast host, but you know, it's one of those things. So let's close up the news bag and go to the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we want to talk about, whatever we watched during the week. I have a little bit of old stuff I watched during the week, which is going to be interesting. I think we'll fit in the AEW analysis into our Revolution preview, Chris.
Yeah, no, people are excited about the Revolution preview.
I think they are.
No,
it's gonna be a fun show. I'm looking forward to this.
People like pay-per-view preview shows. I'm like not joking about that.
it sounded a little snarky to me. So
I'm a little tired, and like I wouldn't say it's snark. It was south of snark. It was like snark light.
Okay, we'll get through this and we'll do a few points on the lazy river. We'll get
We don't have to get. No, I don't have to. It's been long. is what it's been. Like, pick a topic. Let's go.
Okay. Revolution.
Revolution.
12 matches on the show, 3 on a pre-show. Looks like this pre-show is going to be pretty packed for an hour of wrestling, and then 9 matches on a Sunday night. Monday's gonna be tough for those of us who work the 9 to 5, especially East Coast time. Nerds. But yes, first of all, Hook versus QT Marshall. Is there anything other than Hook winning that you can see out of this, Chris?
I mean, you know, QT's been on a hot streak as of late, but shut up. All right, fine. Hook wins.
One of the single most annoying feuds to me in AEW right now, Layla Hirsch taking out Chris Statlander on this pre-show. They bring up the Statlander line about Layla Hirsch's parents putting her up for adoption. Why would you do this when you're trying to baby Chris Statlander? I don't know. Could Layla Hirsch possibly win this match?
I think Layla Hirsch wins the match.
I don't. I think it's they love giving them the best friends, and we're going to get a little bit of booping and half-ass thumbs up from Orange Cassidy. But as announced today on Rampage, we had a debut. The House of Black, Malakai Black, Brody King, and Buddy Matthews taking on the Death Triangle, Pac and Penta Oscura, and the debuting Eric Redbeard with the priest of the Death Triangle, Alex Abrahante, is doing his best William Sadler from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. I just, this thing is everything. You know, when we said, man, if only Aleister Black had a chance to really show what he could do. And he comes into AEW and we're getting Sports Entertainment Central. That rebirth thing for Penta was in Connecticut, and it could have been right down the road, and it could have been Slick and Akeem. This is what that was. We have the House of Black cutting these Tomax and Zaymot from G.I. Joe promos where they're finishing each other's sentences.
I hate them.
And they're bad, but man, Alex Abrahante is just looking like a fool out here in a costume and everything. And we're getting the, you know, oh, this is dark and spooky stuff. Oh, look, there's magic. The stuff that everybody hates. Like, look, everybody hated Papa Shango in WWE. This is Papa Shango.
No, know what? There was one guy when I was a kid. His name was Justin. Justin is the one person who liked Papa Shango. Like really, really, really liked Papa Shango.
Like the warrior putting goo in his head and
yes,
stuff like that.
Like loved all of the voodoo moments of Papa Shango and would like talk about them as like, dude, they should bring back Papa Shango. That guy was awesome.
Yeah.
so that Eric, one, there, Eric, that person existed.
Eric Redbeard is now taking the place of Rey Fénix. That's interesting. And we're going
to
have
you think he'll be able to do the high spots?
I guess he's there to tower over Brody King, who's a big guy, but he's not that big. What are we doing? I get it. I think House of Black obviously wins this. I'm sure there'll be Mist and us talking about the history of the Mist and what it's done to people. I'm not enjoying this, Chris. This is not, look, you're kind of allowed one of these angles in wrestling at all times, but they're never good. This is Paul Jones' army and Jim Crockett Promotions. It really is to me. I think the match will be okay.
I don't care for the baby faces. Like the baby face team here, Death Triangle, has not been like this endearing, beloved baby face team. And so when bad things happen to them, I don't really care. And the House of Black, the more the talk, the less spooky or eerie they are. They're like, I saw this movie recently, The Cursed. And the big problem with that movie is you keep seeing the monster more and more throughout the movie. And by the end of the movie, you've seen the monster so many times that you're no longer remotely scared of the monster.
Well, you did not watch Rampage, but on the Go Home show tonight.
I watched some of it.
Oh, did you see the...
Oh, yeah, Mark Henry had a hard-hitting interview with Ethan Page where he...
Shut up! no, but at the end of the stare down and the security pull apart brawl or whatever, Penta Oscura, to your Lucha Underground taste, broke a security guard's arm. Great babyface move there.
That just shows you exactly how far he is willing to go in this feud.
For the TBS Championship, Jade Cargill versus Ty Conti. Someone might die. Cargill on Wednesday popped me hard with his "bitch, don't no one care about your damn karate ass." I howled at that. That's the best delivery of a promo line by a woman in this company in a very, very long time. Ty Conti can't get words out for her promos, unfortunately, even though she's an interesting presence. I like her still.
You know, between the two of them, you have an actually complete good wrestler who would be qualified to be the TBS champion.
Yes.
But you got Cargill, who the only thing she can do is talk in spots talk. It's not even all the time. And then you got Tay Conti, who can't do that, but the wrestling's good. And you could actually trust Tay Conti to have like a 10-minute match that's going to be watchable. And Jade Cargill, we've given her countless outings.
Can you trust Tay Conti to have a 10-minute match that's watchable if she's the one leading it?
This is the Cargill
question.
She's
the ring general in this match, Chris.
Well, I guess we're going to find out.
I hope they allow Ty to throw Jade Cargill around a bit, though. That'd be nice. That'd be fun.
I can't wait to see Jade not sell any of that stuff. I'm looking forward to Ty getting at the emotional crossroads of, do I just start laying this stuff in and make this woman start respecting it?
Oh, I'd love that, to be honest.
I would love it too. No, I have long since been tired of the Jade Cargill. I don't know how to sell anything.
It's for a different reason. Okay. Never mind. I want badass Tay Conti. I want to see Tay Conti at her most badass as opposed to just cute pixie girl doing, you know, a few throws here and there. I want to see her be a bad, say, you will respect me in this match and start laying it in. Nothing against Jade, because look, the slack hates you for hating Jade. I'm
sorry she can't count to three. It's not my fault. I didn't do that. If she had talked to me, I would have taught her numbers. But no one did, and that's a shame. But she can't count to three.
At DWATG for all your comments. But yeah, I see Jade retaining you.
I think they should get off the Jade train, but I'm kind of increasingly convinced she's going to retain.
AHFO Andrade El Idolo, who brought it tonight in the triple threat. He was great. Matt Hardy and Isaiah Cassidy versus Darby Allin, Sting, and Sammy Guevara in a 6-man tornado tag team match. This is gonna go everywhere and anywhere. Between Isaiah, El Idolo, Sammy, and Darby, those guys are gonna fly all over the place. I think there's gonna be a lot of fun. For a prediction, I'll let you go.
I feel like El Idolo needs to get a win here. So I'm kind of thinking Andrade finds a way.
I'm going to go with Sting pinning Matt Hardy. And then El Idolo and Isaiah Cassidy both putting the boots to him and then opening the door for Jeff Hardy to come in. I think this is okay.
This is the end of the Hardy family
office.
This
is the end of the Hardy family office, and this becomes the Andrade family office finally once and for all. I think. You can't extend these stories forever, for God's sakes. Let's give
no. And you know, actually, the more I think about it, Matt Hardy has been doing soft babyface things in recent weeks in his involvement in matches, like coming out and doing the delete thing with Smart Mark Sterling.
Actually,
he has been increasingly operating in a semi babyface role, which sort of suggests you're right, like a rift. And then the baby faces end up going over.
For the tag team championship, a 3-way match between Jurassic Express, Red Dragon, and the Young Bucks. I thought the Casino Battle Royale, towards the end, it got really good. It just went on and on and on, and teams kept getting added and added and added to a point where you're like, how many damn teams are in this thing?
Yeah, teams keep getting added, but didn't necessarily... I didn't feel like it did a great job advancing a bunch of different storylines going forward either. It was just like, well, we got to have a battle royal. I think given the format of this match, the story is obviously the Bucks and Red Dragon, which I think suggests Jurassic Express gets out as champions. And the real story here is like the further dissension in the ranks between the Bucks, Red Dragon, and going back to that promo with Adam Cole, where it's like, which way are you going to go, Adam? When Brandon was asking him at the end of that.
For the Battle Royale, I really liked Top Flight, and I really want them. I want them in FTR in a nice long feud. That's like an 80s feud between, say, the Horsemen and the Rock and Roll Express. Darius Martin looked fantastic. I loved the tease of him possibly winning the thing. I thought that was really, really well done. As for the match, I've been going over this and I realized I had gone through all these matches and I didn't have a single title change at first. And I just can't see that happening. And I think they give this to Red Dragon and they continue that thing. But if they don't,
Maybe that means that Jade Cargill is going to lose her title here.
The thing is, Jungle or the Jurassic Express have done nothing with these titles, to be honest with you. I know it's been fairly short term that they've had them, but and this is the fault of the company. They haven't built a great feud with Jurassic Express to make them worthy of being the tag team holders, other than it's your turn right now. So I think they are a transition champion. I think it's to get them to Red Dragon. That's my personal thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm going with Jurassic Express because they need wins, and this would give them a signature win over both teams without either team having to take a
I can see that too. I could, and then we're going to be doing like Days of Our Bucks backstage more and more, because Red Dragon's cooled off a bit, as have the Bucks, by doing this storyline and just continually feuding with the best friends over and over and over again.
Well, they're fighting for the title of Adam Cole's friend. And what could there be a more exciting title in the business?
John Moxley against Brian Danielson in a singles match. Here for it. I'm hoping that they just chop the crap out of each other. I hope the blood doesn't come too soon and it's earned. But I'm very much looking forward to this match. I think Moxley wins.
Interesting. I'm thinking Danielson wins, but it's like in sort of a dirty way.
See, I was saying Moxley wins and then Danielson beats him down after the bell.
Okay. I think it's just too obvious that Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson's like not a good guy and Moxley's on. I don't know. I think the veneer falls way earlier in the match. That like, because Danielson sort of tipped his hand once he started stomping in Christopher Daniels on Dynamite here. I don't know. I think Danielson prevails. And I think that that's what allows this feud to prolong.
Chris Jericho versus Eddie Kingston. If Jericho loses, he will shake Eddie Kingston's hand. Interesting promo between him and Proud and Powerful. After that tag team battle royal, I thought there were some mixed messages there. I think they're doing that. Who do you see winning this? Beating who up afterwards?
I think Eddie Kingston wins.
I do too.
And then I think Jericho goes like full heel.
Yes. Where do Proud and Powerful go then? Do they beat up Eddie? Or do they beat up Chris here?
And re-solidify as the heel team?
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. And then that could set up a feud between Sammy and his new friends versus the Inner Circle.
That's what I was thinking too. I'm thinking Proud and Powerful are going to turn on Eddie here. Despite everything to the contrary saying.
Even though this doesn't make any sense with the
whole
story.
Makes no sense whatsoever.
Makes no sense. But that's actually what I think is going to happen.
Face of the Revolution ladder match for future AEW TNT championship match. Keith Lee, Orange Cassidy, Powerhouse Hobbs, Ricky Starks, Wardlow, Christian Cage put in there tonight. 48-year-old Christian Cage going to go through some ladders. And a player to be named, which I believe was added tonight as well, although Excalibur has been saying there's 7 people in this match the whole time, so maybe it's just I missed it. Chris, who do you think wins and who do you think is the player to be named here?
I feel like Keith Lee is the guy who would be the one you'd have penciled in, but maybe it is player to be named. And maybe player to be named is actually going to be the winner.
You think Wardlow's out here?
Ooh, Wardlow.
To continue the MJF feud?
Oh, you think? I feel like Wardlow doesn't win. I feel like Sean Spears costs Wardlow the match.
I'll take that one. Yeah.
I think that keeps Wardlow out. So I'm going to say Keith Lee.
Let's say Keith Lee. I'm going to say people are going to be thinking this is Cesaro, Claudio Castagnoli coming in. I have my doubts. I think Claudio may show up, with Brian Danielson against Moxley there. I'm going to say Brian Cage is your TBD here, to the groans of many, because he was already in one of these Face of the Revolution ladder match. And they can plug that. Oh, look at all the beef in this match. Blah, 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 blah. But I agree with you. I think Keith Lee should win this.
Yeah, I think that's ultimately right.
Dr. Britt Baker, DMD versus Thunder Rosa for a singles match for the AEW Women's World Championship. Sad to say that tag match on Dynamite fell apart. I'm a little worried about Mercedes Martinez. I'm going to be honest with you. I think Xia Li knocking her silly and then her getting knocked silly in the other match with Thunder Rosa plus age. I think it's affecting her a little bit. I think she needs a rest a bit. And you all know I love me some Mercedes Martinez. I'm a little worried though about that because there were times where like there was that boot that Hater put up there for Mercedes where it was like a 5 foot chasm and she still sold it. And you're just like, what is that match fell apart. I hate to say the match had an interesting ending with Thunder Rosa pinning Britt Baker. Chris, does that mean that Britt Baker's retaining this title?
Wouldn't actually surprise me. It really wouldn't. Thunder Rosa just doesn't feel like she's on her way to win the title.
Which is insane.
I know.
Because the entire story from the no DQ match now is Thunder Rosa rebuilding it to get a match with DMD to take the title. And on the Dynamite show, Paul said, well, maybe they're going to save it for Double or Nothing. And I'm like, so we're going to have 3 more months of this Thunder Rosa Britt Baker program where they're doing nothing already.
But they do like to do, I mean, like the Sheeta, don't get me wrong. I love Sheeta and Deeb. It's a great feud, but like they clearly are happy with these weird booking arcs that
we have a lot of people swimming in place here. We really do. Best friends have been feuding with the
if you hadn't watched this
Cole.
Show in 6 months, what's really changed?
Exactly. No, you are exactly correct on that. Other than maybe MJF and Punk. I'm going to say Britt Baker retains. It's insane to me, but all these challengers are colder than they were when they came in here. It's so weird.
Maybe not 6 months. I'm just thinking about it. I guess from whenever Paige and Omega happened, whenever that was that October?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. No, it's almost 6 months, like 4 months. Like it's just, nothing has felt like it's meaningfully changed.
Gonna do the title match before the dog collar match. Singles match for the AEW World Championship. Hangman Adam Page versus Adam Cole. And I think Adam Cole is colder than his debut right now because of this love story about whose side is he on crap. His promos haven't been that hot. I'm not that impressed with Adam Page as a champion right now. And I hate to say that because I really like him, but he hasn't had a feud where he's delivered a great verbal promo and including this one. I mean, look, the two Adams thing where it was okay. It was fine. But he hasn't had that simple feud where he has a setback he has to overcome and he does it in a convincing way where he's talked the talk and walked the walk of a champion. The Bryan Danielson feud was all about him beating up his friends and Adam Page being late to make the save. The Murder Hawk Monster thing was a great spectacle of a match, but it went from 0 to 60 in a week. There was no real huge build there for anger and a blood feud that turned into
and never any doubt.
And never any doubt. You are correct on that as well. And there has to be doubt in there. I originally thought nobody was going to switch titles here because I thought nobody deserved it. But now I'm thinking they're going to try and jumpstart some of these dead titles by giving it to the former Undisputed Era and having people chase. So I think on some sort of fluke that Adam Cole wins this title, even though I don't think it's time yet. What do you say?
The reformation of the Undisputed Era is really intriguing to me as a storyline. I guess potentially this could also be like the Bucks finally turn face. And so I think what this means is that this title match is filled with a lot of drama and crap from Red Dragon and the Young Bucks being involved on some level.
That's interesting you say that, because I'm going to counter you on
it might not be because historically that when even when it seems like it might call for like that kind of like peripheral trauma, they don't do that.
Well, to me, I always thought when Kenny Omega, who has now had a setback, I believe, and he hasn't had his surgeries yet, I always thought the interest was Adam Cole going with the Bucks and then Omega going against the guys who used to be Cole's, or going with the guys who used to be Cole's friends. And I thought Paige might be getting put in here as a proxy for Omega and eventually teaming with O'Reilly and Fish when Cole finally goes with the Bucks and turns on his friends again, quote unquote, from NXT. I think they're going to go back to status quo. I think it's going to be Cole and Red Dragon, and it's going to be the Bucks and maybe Paige eventually, because they've been telling that love story for a while as well.
Yeah. Gotta remember, the Bucks are the ones who got Adam Page that title.
Yeah. So it's the least interesting choice to me, but I think that's the one they go with. Do you think Cole wins the title here?
No.
Okay. And then the match I'm looking most forward to, not going to be the work rate special, but I am just looking forward to it as a fight, as the one feud that has talked me into the building, CM Punk against MJF. I loved the promo on Wednesday, Chris. I don't know how you felt about it, but I loved the explanation of, hey, I might be getting gaslit here, but I'm going to find out it wasn't stupid babyface syndrome. It was Punk doing a mea culpa for things both kayfabe and not kayfabe. I loved the hug. I loved the callback to MJF turning on Cody with a kick in the nuts. And I loved MJF using CM Punk's promo on Raven against from ROH against him in this thing. I thought this was the perfect way to do it. I loved the bleeding. I'm hoping that they don't bleed out so much they can't do it again on Sunday. But I thought this was almost a perfect wrap up for an angle. Now, I didn't like the promo tonight by Punk necessarily, but I really loved this for the go home show.
So once I got past this one major thing, I enjoyed it just fine. The big issue here in terms of continuity is Punk comes out. He is having this real crisis of conscience and everything like that. Never explores in the slightest what he wants to do, assuming that MJF is, you know, being taken at face value here. What he wants to do with this dog collar match on Sunday. How is this guy possibly going to go forward with a dog collar match that involves brutality with a guy he now feels extreme pity for? I guess Punk should have been out there trying to call off the match or something, almost. Like, okay. We don't need to actually have this match, Max. You know, I've thought about it. The dog collar is for...
I like that.
A completely different situation. We don't actually need to have this match, Max. Do you still want to have a match on Sunday? Because, like, I don't... If you really think you're this friggin' monster, or and you feel really guilty about it, I don't know how you then would like take this person to a further level of brutality.
No, that's actually a point I hadn't thought about. I actually forgot. Yeah, it's like one of those. Look, this is a match for hate, and I don't hate you, Max. You know, one of those things where it's like, look, I. We can call off this match. I'll go fight another opponent or whatever. You can fight another opponent. There's still time to change this on the card, blah, blah. Make it part of, you know, put a little bit of depth in there, a little bit of work on the story in terms of, okay, how do we get out of this and explain this to people, blah, 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 once we already have the match signed, et cetera, type of thing. But yeah, just threaten to cancel the match or whatever, and then do the turning up. No, it's back on now. No, I like that idea a lot. Who wins this match, Chris? Because I think both possibilities are very, very interesting.
Yeah, I think Punk's got to win this match because now MJF needs to want revenge, And we haven't gotten to the MJF wants revenge phase yet. So I think in order for this to finally, you know, hit peak, MJF has to feel like he needs revenge and he needs to get things back. So I think he loses this match, and I think it really bothers him.
I'm going to go the other way, because I think the money match for Double or Nothing is MJF and Adam Page. Now, that doesn't explain why I just called the title shot beforehand, because I also think CM Punk and Adam Cole headlining Double or Nothing is a fascinating, fascinating build. So now I'm I'm having second thoughts, because Tony's gonna Tony, but the real, to me, big money match to put your company in there in the stratosphere. Look, you either go with star power or the homegrown thing, and I don't know which one they're gonna go with, Chris. My brain tells me you go with MJF versus Adam Page, because they've been with the company since day one. It's to prove that, hey, we can do more than just use old WWE guys in our thing. And this is really what we want to be about. But man, you got CM Punk and you got Adam Cole, and those two are going to be able to have a promo.
That'd be a hotter program, and it'd be a
hotter
match.
Program. I'm going to say CM Punk. I think it's going to be CM Punk and Cole at Double or Nothing. I think that's what I'll go with. Final answer.
I think, for the record, I think it'll be CM Punk MJF one last time. It might be like MJF might actually go for the career. Like, be like, want Punk Ooh. To put his career on the line at Double or Nothing.
Well, then what would Punk ask for? Shaved head?
Oh, got it. That's really interesting, though. Like, what would be the thing that Punk's asking for?
Career?
Huh.
Oh, I mean, you could do an angle with, but you know he's coming back, so it'd be one of those weak type of things.
Yeah, I know.
Reinstatement of Cody Rhodes' title title shot.
I don't know, like, but I could see. I just see the stakes being. You can still raise the stakes further with Punk and MJF. I don't know. I don't know what the MacGuffin that Punk would want would be there. But Punk fights for Wardlow's freedom.
Ooh, that would be something. Yeah. Okay, cool. So that does our Revolution preview. We've gone a little long, but, let's do some quick hits on the Lazy River here, Chris.
Are you sure you don't want me to do 5 minutes on HelloFresh?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you don't want to do 5 minutes.
I'm kidding.
Okay.
That's a joke.
I thought you were trying to transition to an ad read.
No, there's no ad read this week.
I know.
I was just making a joke about the overly long one last week. Whatever. God, I have a sense of humor about myself occasionally.
I don't. That's my problem.
I know. You're stiff. You are stiff. A little stiff.
That's where the funny comes from. NXT 2.0. What are we doing with these women? Most of these people can't do a headlock and can't do a suplex, but Amari Miller went out there and got concussed by Lash Legend. And then you had, it was an impressive dive, but that Feroz, what's her first name?
Oh, Valentina Feroz.
Feroz gets shot up into the air for Raquel Gonzalez to catch. And thank God Raquel Gonzalez took the brunt of that hit like she did.
But there's another
problem.
But
the dive was dangerous as hell to begin with, the way she landed and stuff. It was just, women are not ready.
Where she was landing is very dangerous, too. That new entryway that they have come up with has very, very little margin for error. And if you create an error like Valentina Feroz flying through the sky, she could have easily, broke her neck hitting those metal bars that they come that are on either side of the entryway. It's madness the way they have redesigned the outside of the ring in NXT, especially for developmental talents. These developmental talents need wider clearances, more places to roll and absorb the shock. this is an accident waiting to happen. And Lash Legend, to your point, atrocious. The Nikita Lyons Lash Legend match, of course, has intrigue for like a car crash thing. And obviously, if you could get Jade Cargill in there, I think it'd be a fascinating watch. I don't understand what they're doing, and they're not developing these people. That's the big problem here.
Just some quick hits on NXT. Other than that, the Windy Chu Dakota Kai team is everything I wanted it to be for 1 week. They can now lose, but God bless them. It was just unrepentantly stupid, as much as I love it.
I think they beat Cora Jade and Raquel Gonzalez.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
God help us if they do, but I'll enjoy for what it is. I enjoyed LA Knight is a welcome presence for me now on NXT. He really is. I like somebody who can actually talk on the show, and he seems.
I think he's fine. Yeah. He's not my favorite guy in the world or whatever. Guy. But like he's a very solid mid card presence in my opinion.
And Waller. Is that the name I'm trying to remember here?
Yeah.
He's great. He is. He's going to need some more seasoning, but he is, he at least knows his character and is very self-aware. And I'm watching him over the past few weeks. He is, he's pretty dang good. And I enjoyed the main event. I enjoyed, Braun and Tommaso against the Dirty Dogs. I thought, look, if you're not going to do anything with the Dirty Dogs on the main roster, they might as well be here, being the grizzled veterans that they are.
Yeah. I thought it was fine. If anything, Bobby Roode could really use a reinvention as like the original legacy champ of NXT.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree there. NXT UK, the one that I had, the main event this week was pretty damn good. It was, why can't I remember the champ's name all of a sudden? Ilya Dragunov.
Yeah.
Dragunov and Nathan Frazier. And Nathan Frazier, they got something with him, and he is just dying on the vine down there. I want him and Seth Rollins at a Mania sooner than later. Cause Seth's getting older. And Frazier's ready, I think. But man, that NXT UK thing, look, NXT UK hasn't been hitting on all cylinders, and I haven't been watching a lot of it lately. But that match, pretty damn good. Go out of your way to watch. Chris, anything on your end on the Lazy River?
Gunther, still horrible. Like, I hate this name. It's just
Skinny
not...
Gunther is not doing it for me now. I hate to say that.
It does take away from his mystique, doesn't it? Like, yes. I felt like... The thing that made Walter good is that you could tell that he was in great shape, but he was also like slightly larger, and that made him more intimidating, not less intimidating.
Yeah.
In no way did you look at bigger Walter and go, oh, I could beat Doughboy. No, you're terrified of that guy. Like that guy's huge and powerful, and you know that everything he does hurts.
Yeah.
Skinnier Gunter, yeah, I feel like in a weird way he looks great. Like I mean, he looks cut, but I Vince wants him to be an endomorph or an ectomorph, and that's ectomorph. Not yeah. He wants him to be an ectomorph, and that's not what Walter is. Walter's
no.
Like a really, really, really intimidating endomorph.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with it. He has the
no,
size.
No, it's great. He's awesome.
He's tall, for God's sakes, Vince.
I would never change that.
The obsession with body guy stuff.
Ectomorphic
and he's in
body guys,
and he's,
too.
And he's in magnificent shape now. Don't get me wrong, but man, there's just something that's being lost with Walter with abs. I'm sorry, and that maybe that's Gunter. Gunter's the in shape. Gunter's the fitness model living inside of Walter. There we go. a couple of quick hits for me.
What's the name of your really in shape person who lives inside of you?
Dude, that guy died in my 20s because it never happened.
Mine's named Crunch. Crunch Novembrino.
Crunch Novembrino. Okay. Thank you for SmackDown having promos in the camera to begin the show. They weren't great promos, but it was a start. I liked that twist to it. That was cool. The rest of SmackDown was, boy, Pat McAfee was off tonight, just way off. And that Austin Theory.
Boy, he just seemed adrift during the Austin Theory.
I think he was high. Like, I think he was high,
dude. I mean,
because he referenced it on air.
Oh, did he?
Well, he referenced that he was into vitamins.
Oh, so he just popped too many gummies and like was on, like he forgot that he was actually a character on the show and it was instead just kind of watching the show.
Yeah, I think so. I think. And I watched in terms of classic wrestling this week. I've been, for some reason, I got on Chris Zellner's YouTube channel and I was watching 81 Georgia Championship Wrestling. And I had never seen them as a team because I had only known from their Japan work a little bit. But the Georgia Tag Team Champions at this time were Terry Gordy and Jimmy Superfly Snuka as heels, feuding against Kevin Von Erich and Michael P.S. Hayes, if you can imagine that. This is very young, clean-shaven Michael P.S. Hayes, but he still has that voice where he's been drinking like 3 bottles of liquor a night. Gordy and Snuka are riding high on their own supply here, man. Snuka, if you've only seen Jimmy Snuka as kind of the wild-eyed, crazy man from the jungle who Vince McMahon covered for a murder type of person, he is cocky and a bully, and it's something that I had never seen before. He's wearing a cowboy hat like Gordy is to match him. And it's awesome. Gordy is the cocky heel of this team. And he's doing his own little version of the Fargo strut after a victory. He's egging on Snuka to be more of a bully. This was magnificent amongst other promos, because this is a time where like Piper and Arn Anderson or Ole Anderson and a bunch of just dudes who would later become much, much bigger or in the territory. But I had never seen a lot of the Gordy Snuka team. I had heard a lot about them in Japan and how Gordy and Snuka had a falling out, but I never seen them. So that was a lot of fun. Chris, anything else on your end?
Not that I could think of. I don't know that I have. we did the AEW stuff and we're good to go here. Yeah.
So we thank you for your patronage as usual. This has been Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. You can follow me at Crap Game 13 for bad takes and dad jokes. You can follow Chris at DWATG. That stands for Don't Worry About the Government. It's the name of his political show. He's going to tell you about it now.
Don't Worry About the Government. We dropped an episode this week talking about Ukraine. You can hear me opine on that on iTunes and on Stitcher and on Spotify. Probably be taping another one here whenever I get a chance to get back and record, hopefully in the next week or so. Follow me at DWATG, and if you want guitar lessons, hit me up on Twitter.
And you can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. Updated when a new episode drops every week. If you don't want to follow our banter, we're okay with that. We'll see you next week after Revolution. Good night.